Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. This is Janice Cromer with America's Great Loop Cruisers Association, and this is our weekly blog radio show. Some of you may be wondering what the Great Loop is and don't even realize it exists, but there is a continuous waterway around the eastern portion of North America, and it includes both the U.S. and Canada, and it goes around the East Coast and through the Canadian canals, down the rivers, and across the Gulf. AGLCA, as we call ourselves, we're just a group of people who want to share the adventure and pass information back and forth. We have a website. It's www.greatloop.org, and you can read about the benefits of joining and become a member. We'd love that. Our guest host this week is Al Golden. Al is the founder and president of International Marine Insurance Services and has a marvelous reputation in the industry and among the members of AGLCA. Al's going to be talking about boat insurance, carriers, and policies. I want to introduce also our home port crew. Steve's with us. Steve, say hello.
Morning, everyone.
And Beth, our marketing coordinator, Beth McHugh.
Good morning, everyone.
At any point during this broadcast, you can call in and ask a question. Beth will put you in the screening room and get you connected. The toll-free number, and write this down, please, is 877-497-1815. And remember that sometime during the show, we will be asking our question of the week. So make sure you listen to the entire segment, and you can win either a new one-year membership or a renewal if you're already a member. Okay, Al, you ready to get started?
I'm ready.
Okay, why don't you first give us some information on your personal background?
Well, I'm as proud of my boating background as I am of my insurance background. I started, probably earliest photos of me, wrapped up in blankets in the bottom of a rowboat. That would have been on the Severn River in Maryland, where I spent summers growing up. And when I was in my mid-teens, my dad gave me a 14-foot Old Town Knockabout sailboat. And as soon as I got out of school, I would pack it up with camping gear and go camping at various places around the Chesapeake Bay area. Then we went through a whole series of boats, both power and sailboats, and in 1976 we bought a boat to go cruising on, and in 1978 actually took off and crossed the Atlantic, sailed all the way through the Med as far as Israel, and then back the other way and then back down to the Caribbean where we spent another half a year.
Parents, Al, or with your own personal family, or?
My own personal family.
That must have been some adventure, my goodness.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But it was wonderful, and it's the centerpiece of my life, really.
Uh-huh.
And when I came back, I was recruited to go to work riding yachts for the guy who had been my insurance agent before I went away. And I worked for him for 6 years, and then in 1987 started this agency, and that was probably the best thing that I ever did in my life, and it finally gave me the opportunity in the early 2000s to put together the Jackline program, which is a program designed for world cruisers and underwritten by a U.S. carrier, and that was Markel Corporation, and they were really the first U.S. carrier that was willing to step up to the plate and insure people anywhere in the world. So that was that's my insurance background. That's my boating background. And,
okay. When our members or anyone out there, not just the members, when you're looking for insurance, are there some essential points that you should make sure are covered, or just in general, what should we be looking for?
Well, there are, but before we get into coverage, there are really a couple of really essential points that you need to be aware of. one very important point you need to understand about boating insurance is that marine insurance is not regulated. It's not regulated by the feds. It's not regulated by the states. It's not regulated, period. And the product that somebody's asking you to buy has not been approved by anybody other than the management of the company that you're buying it from. And so it's extremely important that you understand what it is that you're buying, because it's not like auto insurance or homeowners insurance, which is basically so tightly controlled that the product that you're buying is basically a commodity, or nearly a commodity.
Do you know why that is, why the government hasn't become involved in something as safety conscious as marine insurance?
Traditionally, maritime law, or admiralty law, as it's sometimes called, is basically involved in commercial shipping. And there is no distinction between recreational boats and maritime and basically commercial shipping. And so the same laws apply to each, and because they are so mobile in a maritime sense, that the states are prohibited by this Constitution from regulating maritime law, and the feds just have never bothered. And so I personally, as much as I hate the feds being involved in anything in my life, it's really essential at some point that they do start to regulate that, because there are too many bandits out there that are writing policies that are virtually useless.
I think getting involved would give the cruisers some sense of safety and protection, I would think.
You would think, but unfortunately that hasn't happened yet. And so there's, as I say, a lot of bandits out there. The other really important point, and this I get a lot of flack from, particularly from policyholders, insurance is intended for the protection of you against a financial catastrophe. And that doesn't mean a $500 towing claim. It doesn't mean low deductibles. But there are some individuals, particularly among agents in our industry, that sell, low deductibles, and the companies promote these Mickey Mouse coverages that are not there to protect you against a financial catastrophe. So, if a $500 towing claim represents a financial catastrophe to you, you probably shouldn't be involved in this conversation, essentially.
Okay, thank you. Okay, well, we begin to look for an insurance policy. We're out there, studying the different carriers and where we should go. What should we be looking for as key elements?
Well, primarily you're looking for an all-risk policy. The alternative is... I'm sorry?
What does that mean?
Okay, the alternative is a named perils policy. And named perils means that you're only insured for those specific perils that are mentioned in the policy form, fire, lightning, theft, those sorts of things. The all-risk policy starts out by saying we insure you for all risk of physical loss with these certain exclusions. So if it's not something that's specifically excluded, then it's covered. And you can have various incidences, like we've had a couple. One where a shoreside hose was connected and left connected while the people went out for dinner. It came back, the hose had broken, and the boat had sunk in its space because of this broken freshwater hose. Okay. Well, they were not insured this was a Lloyd's policy that did not cover that because it wasn't specifically mentioned as a named peril. So under an all-risk policy, that would have been covered. Another one would be we had an incident where, again, people on a Lloyd's policy that was a named perils policy, and they had guests spill a mixed drink into their electronics panel and blew out everything. And that was not covered because, again, it's not specifically mentioned as a potential risk. So all risk, obviously, is the way to go. Most policies either include or exclude mechanical breakdown. So if you have a boat that everybody wants to insure, there's no reason to accept a policy that excludes mechanical breakdown. It's readily available from the top companies. The next item that you want to look at is how they pay off claims. And what you absolutely want to have is an agreed value policy. That is that in the event of a total loss, the company pays you the agreed value in the policy. No argument. There's no discussion. It is what it is. The alternative to that is actual cash value, where the company at the time that the loss occurs or after the loss occurs determines how much your boat was worth, and that's how much they're going to be willing to pay you. Now, it's important to remember.
Yeah. Now, who decides what the boat is worth? Do you get a survey or?
You mean going into the policy?
Well, if something happens and the company is going to pay you the replacement cost, who determines what that replacement cost is?
Well, if it's an agreed value policy, that figure is already on the policy. That's, if it's $100,000 or $200,000 or whatever it is, that's the value that the company has agreed to, and that's the amount that they would pay you in the event of a claim. If it's an actual cash value policy, then the claims department decides how much they're going to be willing to pay you, and the amount that's on the policy face has nothing to do with it. So obviously, and particularly in today's world, you want to have a properly valued policy, an agreed value type, so that you know exactly what you're going to get in the event of a total loss. The other side of that, and the thing that happens far, far more frequently, is a partial loss. And with partial losses, and particularly with boats, you want a replacement cost policy. And replacement cost refers to basically what it should be is new for old. So if your engine is destroyed or your electronics are destroyed by a lightning strike or something like that, that the amount that they're going to pay you is based on the cost of new equipment similar to what you had on board, less your deductible. Actual cash value, again, works for things like automobiles because there are a million automobiles out there just like yours with all the same parts and so forth. So they can replace parts where they can replace the used automobile with a used automobile. But obviously with boats that's of real rarity, there aren't junkyards around with boats sitting in them. And so it's really critical that you have a replacement cost policy that will pay you on the basis of new for old when you have a claim. And obviously, again, partial losses are so much more frequent than total losses that that's really the most critical element in a yacht policy. Then moving on to salvage, the differential is really extreme. There are some policies that won't pay for salvage at all. There are other policies that will pay up to 5% or 15% of the value of the boat. But again, you know, if as long as you have a easily insurable boat, the top of the line carriers and the top of the line policies pay for salvage up to the value of the boat in addition to the value of the boat. So that means that they could, and theoretically at least, pay you if you, let's say it's a $100,000 boat and you have a salvage cost of $100,000 boat, $100,000, and the boat is repairable, they could pay you as much as, you know, $200,000, $100,000 to the salvage company and $100,000 to you for the loss of the boat. So that's very critical. In fact, in our country, the typical salvage claim, the maximum salvage claim, is usually somewhere around 20% of the value of the boat. And So it's not really that the biggest bugaboo that people make it out to be. The key element is that the likelihood is the salvage company will come along and say, we need you to sign this form in order for us to start salvaging your vessel.
My ignorance is showing, but could you go into a little bit of a definition or an explanation of just exactly what salvage means?
Sure. And it's very interesting with recreational boats. Basically, because the Coast Guard some years ago backed out of doing property salvage and leave that to the commercial salvers, towing companies, and there are a couple of big ones. There's Towboat US and I can't think of what the other one is called. But, Tito, right, yeah. And basically what they've come to is a differential between towing and salvage. Now, you have to understand that this doesn't exist anywhere else in the world. It's only a U.S. type of thing. And basically the towing companies say that if you're aground, as an example, and they send out a boat to tow you off, and that individual boat with the crew aboard and the equipment aboard is able to move you off of the grounding and tow you somewhere, they call that a soft grounding. And although anything like that is still theoretically salvage, they treat that on a different basis and charge you for basically for time from their pier out to your site, the time that they spend on site, the time that they tow you back, and the time that they take to get back to their base, and basically whatever is $150 or $250 an hour, that's what your charge is going to be. If, however, they need to send a second boat out, or send additional equipment or additional personnel out, then that's considered to be a hard grounding, and you're charged on the basis of salvage. And salvage is kind of a nebulous thing, but there is a sort of formula that if it gets in front of a judge will determine the amount of the salvage based on the extent of hazard to the people on board the boat that's being salvaged. The hazard to the people on board the salvaging boat, the hazard to the boat that's being salvaged, and the hazard to the boat that's doing the salvaging, and on and on and on, based on his interpretation of what all those factors add up to. And he then decides what the amount of the salvage would be.
Doesn't necessarily mean you don't own the boat anymore. I mean, I always thought of salvage if they took your boat away from you.
No. That would they may have the boat if they've towed it in and you're not aboard anymore. But they would then have to go in front of a court in order to have the that salvage assigned to them. And again, generally speaking, particularly with recreational boats, 20% seems to be about as high as the courts will go in awarding salvage. Does that cover your...
Yes, it does. Yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you. And let's go on now to protection and indemnity. What are your thoughts on that?
All right, protection and indemnity is the... really ancient form of liability for vessels. And you have to understand that, again, because recreational vessels are treated the same as commercial vessels, that if they're operating in international waters, and international waters can be anything that's connected to the ocean, anything like a lake that expands between two states, and so if the boat is operating in international waters, then it's subject to maritime law. And under maritime law, a vessel is an entity in the same sense that a corporation would be under standard law, under common law. And so the vessel herself can be sued. It's not a very common occurrence, but it can happen. And when that does happen, it's referred to as being sued in rem, R-E-M, as opposed to in personam. And so because the vessel can be sued herself as an entity, it's important that the liability protection is a pure protection and indemnity coverage that covers not only you, but the as the owner of the boat, but also the boat herself, because she can be sued.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
I think if it's okay with you, Al, we'll break for a minute and go to our question of the week.
Sure.
Okay, everybody who's listening, I want to know, and the first person who gives the correct answer will win a one-year membership or a one-year renewal. You can call toll-free 877-497-1815 with the answer to the question, which is, what is the name of the AGLCA, that's America's Great Loop Cruisers Association's newsletter? Beth's ready to take your call, so go ahead and call in. And Al, I think we'll pick up now with how policies are priced. I can imagine there's a tremendous difference in what you can get out there.
Oh, that's for sure. And, you know, and those items that we talked about earlier are the things that come into play as far as pricing is concerned on an overall type of basis. But as far as the top-of-the-line companies insuring boats or placing premium amounts on boats, the first thing that they do is they go into a table of values. And so there's at $50,000 there's a value, and at $100,000 is a value, and all on and on and on up into the millions. And so the first number that they pick up on is the value of the boat. And obviously that has a very profound effect on what the ultimate premium is going to be. It would be pretty rare for it to be the exact premium because there are other issues that come into it. The first major issue that comes into it is the navigation area. And that's because, if I can use some examples within the Great Loop, Chesapeake Bay is an extremely safe area with a 13-foot average depth and an 18-inch tide range and a sand and mud bottom with no rocks, no reefs, et cetera. And so the rates for Chesapeake Bay are extremely low, as opposed to, for example, New England, where Maine, as an example, is almost all rocks and with very little soft bottom and with huge tidal ranges and so forth. And so, you know, while a grounding in New England may be a catastrophe, a grounding in Chesapeake Bay is an inconvenience. And so it's pretty rare to get any significant claims out of Chesapeake Bay, as an example.
Well, I have a question. What happens, in general, if you have a claim and you're found outside of that navigation area that your policy was for?
Then you probably don't have any coverage. That's a warranty policy. Yeah. You know, basically, they're setting your pricing based on the navigation area that you say you're going to be operating in. And so if you move outside of that area, and have a loss, it's very likely that they'll deny your claim.
So you need to keep in touch with your carrier, with your plans, I would imagine.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's for sure. The other area that comes into play is your experience to some degree. If you've had, 3 to 5 years of experience on the same boat, you'll probably qualify for just about any program around. They usually look at somewhere between 7 and 10 feet as the as the amount that they allow you to move up and still insure you. And, of course, that varies from company to company. But the other things that come into play are credits for Coast Guard auxiliary courses or Power Squadron courses. If you have a Coast Guard captain's license, that's an additional credit. It gets to the extreme that with the Seven Seas Cruising Association, as an example, they require you to have a 1,000-mile uninterrupted passage in order to reach their, what they call their Commodore status. And once you've done that, you qualify for a 10% credit on the Jackline policy that we administer here.
My question would be, how do they monitor that? If you just say, well, I've had 7 years' experience, but you don't have any certificate, do they just take your word for it, or?
Basically, as far as the application is concerned, they'll take your word for it.
Okay.
The problem would be if you have a six-figure valued boat and it's a total loss, and then you start doing some serious investigation, they should be able to establish fairly well what your prior experience has been. Whether they can do that accurate, I have never had anybody who has been turned down on a claim because of the years of experience that they've put on their form. We have had people who have had claims that didn't report them, that basically the company comes along and says, well, we're sorry you lost your boat, but we found out that, in fact, you've had three claims over the last 5 years that you didn't report to us on the application, and so here's your premium back for the last 2 years.
Okay, thank you.
So, can I interrupt for one second?
Yeah, go ahead, Beth.
We did actually have a caller, and he did have the right answer, but he didn't really want to be on the air, so I just wanted to let you know. We had Rick Cesati called in with the right answer.
Is he a member or is it just a listener?
Yes, he is. He's a member, and he said he listens to the show all the time. Usually he listens to the archives, but today he got to listen to it live. So.
Okay, I'll get with you offline to get his information. Thank you. Okay, I guess we're ready to go on to insurance score.
Ah, yes, my favorite. Unfortunately, in today's world, where automobile insurance and homeowners insurance, to a very large degree, the final premium is based on what they call insurance score. It's really your credit score. And they go into get your credit score, and your final premium is adjusted according to your insurance score. So if you have got a very good insurance score, credit score, you'll probably wind up with a very low premium. If you have a bad credit score, you're going to wind up with a really high premium. That's unfortunate in my opinion, how the insurance score will work. Probably their second most frequent claim is lightning. So how does your credit score apply to the lightning strikes? I mean, it's just silliness. But the companies have gotten into it, and that's where it is, and there's not much we can do about it. And so, as far as the highlights are concerned, that's the highlights of what you should be looking for in a policy and a basic idea of how the value is arrived at.
Right. I have a question that may be a little bit difficult or sticky to answer, Al, but I know a lot of our members, and it's been a lot of chatter on a discussion forum, they claim they have a huge, huge swing in quotes from insurance companies. If you are actually truly comparing apples to apples, which is very difficult to do with carriers, how much of a swing might you expect going to different, shopping around and going to different carriers?
It can be huge. It's, again, for one thing, because the insurance score comes into it, and and they don't all treat things the same way, that can have a major impact on your final premium. But the other thing is that the items that we mentioned at first, Ed, are the critical items to look at in a policy, can have a great deal to do with it.
So it's really worth it to shop around then.
It is, as long as you can understand what it is that you're being offered.
I think that's the critical part. It's really hard to understand in the policies exactly what you're getting.
Yeah, and the answer is you can stay up at night, trying to read an insurance policy. You can get an attorney to read the policy for you, or you can find an agent that you can put your trust in that will describe to you what it is that he's saying. Basically, when we send out a quote from here, we send the policy with it. And so right up front, there's the policy. This is the amount that we want you to pay, and this is the policy that we want you to buy. And if you have any questions, then give us a call. And we're happy to go through our own policies with you or to give you a comparison between what it is that we've offered you and the policy that someone else has offered you.
Right. I have to tell our members out there listening, when we announced that Al was going to be on the show, I got several emails from members recommending him highly. So you're very, very well liked in the industry, Al. Let's go on there. We need to close up soon. I don't want to take your time. I had told you about 30 minutes, and we've got time. I don't know if you do. But are there any companies that include specifically the Great Loop as a discrete navigation territory, or that you can get coverage for the loop?
Yeah, I mean, basically, most of the companies will basically, they'll insure you, depending where you're starting from. They'll start, let's say, from Chesapeake Bay. They'll insure you for Chesapeake Bay, and then for the East Coast, and then for the Great Lakes, and then for the inland lakes and rivers, and then for the Gulf Coast. And all of those things are various premium levels, as we spoke about. And then they want you to call in, and whenever you move from one to another, they want you to call in and change your navigation area. And the only company that I know of positively that has the Great Loop as a navigation territory is Markel, where basically...
You repeat that, Al? I didn't get it.
Markel, M-A-R-K-E-L.
Okay, thank you.
They have a navigation territory where they've included all of those elements in one navigation territory, and they've taken the premiums for each of those areas and averaged them out, and that's what they charge. So it's slightly less than it would be for the Atlantic Coast, as an example, but more than it would be for just the Great Lakes. But if you're really doing the full loop within a year, it averages out and it comes out the same way. But it makes things so much easier because you've got the entire Great Loop is included in the policy. And you don't need to call in ever unless you have a claim, of course. But
that does make
life easier, yeah, for sure.
Okay, to close up, Al, first of all, I'd like you to mention your webpage. I know you have some resources for boaters. And where else can we find more general information about boating insurance in general?
Well, it's interesting you ask because just recently we've had the hurricane, of course, go up the East Coast. And on our webpage, there's one of the companies that has some years ago put together a very complete description of the preparations that you should make to protect your vessel with a hurricane on the way. And you can get to that. It's www.imis.pro. And then / hurricane info. That's, again, www.imis.pro/hurricane info. Interestingly, next week on Wednesday the 7th, I'll be doing a webinar for what they call the Seven Seas University, next Wednesday at 7 o'clock in the evening. And what they've done is basically you don't need to be a member of SSCA. They would typically charge $10 if you are not a member of SSCA. But in this particular case, I told them what was going on today, and they've offered a $10 credit basically against that. And so essentially it would be free for anybody. If you need to find out how to get onto that, again, go to our webpage at www.imis.pro. And, well, actually, better than that, send me an email. And my email address is al@imis.pro. And I'll send you the information that you need to find the webinar and to sign onto it.
That's very generous of you and the Seven Seas University, Al. Thank you. I think that's a good point to close. You've been great. You've helped us with loads of information. Thank you very much. I'm sure we'll have you on again soon. Anybody who listens to our show and wants to hear back shows, they're all archived at www.greatloop.org. Next week, we'll be featuring the last of Dr. Jerry Reeves talking, and he's going to be covering the most important equipment on your boat, which is your body. So tune in next week for medical information on how to prepare for the loop and keep yourself healthy. And I think we're closed now. And Al, again, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Bye, everyone.
Fair winds, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.